Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Jeff Cindy Wolf.
And today with us we have Jay Butcher from Neal's Yard Dairy, a huge favorite supplier.
I am so excited to talk with you, Jay. I'm so glad you're here with us.
Hi there, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. And just so everyone knows, we have been buying cheese from you for many, 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 many years, and you are one of our greatest sources of some of the most amazing cheese in the world. So they're from the British Isles. And can you tell everyone a little bit of the history behind Neal's Yard Dairy?
Yeah, sure. So Neal's Yard Dairy basically started originally in 1979 in an area of London that is just behind Covent Garden. Mm-hmm. And that area at that particular time was in a real sort of downturn. It's historically, you know, one of the big food markets in London, but it got sort of moved out from central London. And as a result, there's sort of an opportunity for a lot of new businesses really to sort of set up in central London at quite cheap rates. And a gentleman called Nick Saunders, who was kind of a visionary, established a series of businesses there. So, for example, Monmouth Coffee, that still exists today, started there. There's also a small sort of a prototype of a Whole Foods style store began there. And then also a dairy, which initially started producing things like creme fraiche, some yogurts, mm-hmm. right in the heart of London. So you can imagine this tiny little space.
That's great.
And, you know, what happened was over that period of time, Randolph Hodgson, who had just done a degree in food science, began working there. And he started bringing in and selling more and more British farmhouse cheeses, which at that point were comparatively rare in many ways. We'd gone through a period since sort of the First World War where things like rationing, a huge sort of outward migration of people working in dairies in the countryside happened. Also, huge industrialization of cheese making happened. You know, we were really sort of in a position where the sort of the farmstead British cheeses were becoming increasingly rare, and there wasn't necessarily a big market for them outside of the local regions. But Randolph started bringing in these cheeses really to sort of support a lot of the producers that he found out there. And, you know, the success really of the dairy came from that these cheeses were now being brought in by him, sold on the counter to customers in London. You know, if you fast forward to where we are now, we've really sort of grown off the back of being here to support, you know, the production of British farmhouse cheeses and, you know, certainly the development of new ones. So, you know, we've grown from this tiny little business that was running out of this tiny little space in Covent Garden. I mean, it's a minuscule little shop.
That's kind of amazing because, you know, what a huge, you know, for something to start so small and to be sort of, as you said, you know, after that whole industrialization of cheese in England, and to have this person that, you know, is searching out these beautiful farmhouse cheeses, and now we have all these amazing choices from you all, and you're representing so many amazing artisans, and now, you know, we can get these here in Baltimore. I mean, this is such a great opportunity.
We've been getting them, I think, since maybe 1998 or 1999.
Yeah, Tony started buying from you right after we opened the restaurant, and then at some point, I took over the cheese program. And when we started to grow our businesses, and I just, you know how much I love cheese. I love it, live for it. I mean, it's just one of my favorite, and it's the joyous part of one of the more joyous parts of my day is getting to, you know, work with the cheese, put it on the cart, taste every piece, make sure I'm aging it properly. So with your experience, what are some of your favorite cheeses that you all are selling and maybe right now, and maybe a couple of stories about your amazing cheesemakers?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tricky question. I mean, the most amazing and fantastic thing about cheese, and I'm sure people, you know, familiar with the wine industry, you know, you do get variations between vintages. So you can have some that are exceptional and, you know, wildly mm-hmm. more complex or different to others. With cheese, you've got a batch variation that can be, you know, a day's production can produce different cheeses, and, you know, one day's production against another can also have these cheeses that vary wildly.
Mm-hmm. And well, that's real cheese.
Yeah, it's a living, breathing thing, just like wine.
Exactly,
and constantly aging.
That's the beauty of it, and really for us, you know, the one thing that we always do is, you know, every Thursday morning we go through to the arches where we mature the cheeses, which are, you know, these Victorian arches that run east out of London. Bridge Station.
That's great.
So they're man-made caves, and, you know, we go through and we try everything to get a real good understanding of what's good.
I want to be there for that sometime. That's a great thing. So the caves are made out of what, do you know?
Yeah, so they're built, I think, in the 1850s or so, and they're Victorian brick arches. So they've had a good sort of almost coming up to 125 years or so to absorb lots of water.
Okay.
So it's perfect sort of humidity, very stable temperature. Really, really ideal for maturing cheeses. And in terms of, you know, the favorites, I mean, it varies so much from week to week. You know, at the moment, we're really excited about Stichelton.
Yes.
Which is, you know, it's a fascinating story in its own right. So I don't know if you're familiar with Stichelton.
Yeah, please, yes, please tell the story.
So, I mean, Stichelton is effectively a unpasteurized blue cheese that harks back to the days of when when Stilton, which is one of the, you know, the big well-known cheeses of the UK, was made with raw milk. The PDO, so the sort of the protected mark of Stilton, means that they can't use raw milk anymore.
Okay. Right.
And it was Randolph Hodgson, who I spoke about before, who really was keen on reviving essentially the production of this style of cheese, but using unpasteurized, as in raw milk. And it's made, funny enough, by an American who's from Syracuse, a guy called Joe Schneider.
Joe Schneider, all right.
Yeah, so you've got this beautiful sort of combination of really reviving a very ancient style of cheese, a farmstead Stilton, effectively, by any other name, being made by an American in conjunction with Randolph. And it's a fascinating story because in many, you know, the last sort of cheese made like that is out of the living memory of a lot of people. So really, they're going on the palate of Randolph, and they're always searching for what was maybe, you know, what was Stilton like when it was raw. And for us, you know, it's a beautiful cheese at the moment. It's incredibly rich. It's buttery. It's got umami in there. It's got a sweetness. Very light bluing. You know, it's a very sort of decadent cheese to have, and I think for us at the moment, you know, it's one of the ones we're really, really excited about, and we're going to be over in the US, actually, funnily enough, in June, with Joe Schneider.
Oh, great.
You know, traveling around and you know, explaining the story of this cheese, which is, you know, I guess one of the first farmhouse Stilton style cheeses to be made in you know, a good 100 years or so.
How far away is his farm from where Stilton, where Colston Bassett is?
So they're about 20 minutes drive from each other, and it's actually made in, you know, one of the counties where, you know, Stilton can be made, which is in Nottinghamshire. It's made on the Welbeck Estate, which is a huge estate near Collingthwaite.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful, beautiful part of the world. Very, very good pasture. You know, they've got their own herd of cows producing very, very high quality milk. You know, they make about 40 tons a year, which is a remarkably small production of cheese when you consider, you know, a lot of the big Stilton makers are making several thousand tons a year. So it's a very, very small operation. But yeah, it's definitely in the historical center of where these types of cheeses are made.
Jay, let me ask you a question. Mm. One of the things I worry about with American perception of British cheese is the word cheddar. Because we use it to describe all sorts of terrible industrial things.
Mm.
What should, and there's so many different marvelous cheddars produced in Britain, what should people actually know about cheddar?
It's an interesting one. I mean, we lost the name cheddar a long, long time ago, and I think, you know, partly is, you know, maybe the outward migration of people from that part of the world, you know, relocating to places like Australia, America. You know, they took the knowledge they had on how to make cheddar-style cheeses, and you know, in a way, quite rightly called them that. But you're right; we've lost that to a certain extent, and you know, there is a sort of a synonymous association with cheddar as in, you know, a low-quality, easy-to-melt cheese that you find in strips. And it's certainly a tough job, you know, on our side to sort of really educate people. And I think it's you know, fantastic credit to a lot of the customers that we work with around the world, that they are really there to enthuse and educate individuals about what is a real cheddar. And, you know, that's, you know, typically speaking, a raw milk cheese. It's a cheese that's made using the milk from that farm's particular herd. The, you know, real cheddars are typically cloth-bound as well. You know, they use an animal rennet. Generally speaking, you know, there's a minimum of 1 year of aging on those cheeses too. So, and if you look at it sort of historically and geographically, the original sort of source of all cheddars came from Somerset, and generally sort of in a very small area around North Cadbury, which is almost sort of in the center of that particular county. We've got, you know, three cheddars that come from there that you know, meet all these criteria. So you have Montgomery's cheddar, Keene's cheddar, and Westcombe cheddar.
There's an intensity, a density, a complexity to those cheeses that is just remarkable and opposite of what the sort of rubbery yellow things are that we often consume.
Well, and Keene's cheddar, as you know, is one of my very favorite pieces. Yep. And that just sort of cellar taste, that earthiness, that sort of, I don't know, would you say butterscotchy, almost, you know, this richness that's inherent to that piece. And it has a nice level of acidity that's just absolutely gorgeous on your palate. I mean, the whole thing, the cheese is just, it sings.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things they look at is, you know, very much that, you know, in cheese making, the fat and protein levels in the milk. You know, if there's too much fat, you end up with these really moist cheeses that have this sort of tangy, sharp flavor. And I think, you know, it's something you can find quite often in some of the more industrial cheeses. And I think people sort of seek out sometimes that tangy strength of flavor. But as you said, you know, with the real farmhouse cheddar, you know, you're getting the sweet, nutty, meatiness, almost like a brothy flavor in there that really kind of characterizes, you know, the farmhouse British cheddars in that sense. And also some of these, you know, the ones that are made in America as well. But for us, it's that, you know, nutty meatiness is definitely, you know, core to a lot of the pleasure that we derive from those cheeses. And I think a lot of our customers do too.
Thank you, Jay. So you have two shops in London that people could visit when they're there, correct?
Yeah, so we still have the original site, although we've now moved all the maturation and the running of the business out of there, which is just literally, you know, right in the heart of the sort of commercial shopping district of London. And then the other one is at Borough Market, which is just by London Bridge Tube Station.
Very good. Well, Tony and I were there many years ago, and I will never forget walking down into the washed rind cheese room. It was one of
the running water on the floors. And,
My goodness. Can you we have very little time left, but really quickly explain what a washed rind cheese is.
Sure. So effectively, it's a cheese that depends, either the producer themselves will be washing. It can either be in a water. It can be in a saline solution. Or quite often, you know, people can wash them as well in a spirit. So sometimes a mark, like you'd see in Burgundy, they use an alcohol. And in Belgium, you know, typically they would wash those in beers as well. And really what that does is, you know, it does impart a certain amount of flavor. For example, you know, the salt adds to the flavor of the cheese, as do the spirits and the beers. But really what it does is also encourages the growth of B linens, which is that bacteria that gives you that really kind of, you know, that funky, pungent smell.
Mm-hmm. Well, funky and pungent is a good way to end our cheese program, Jay. Thanks
Thank
so much for coming on with us.
No problem. Pleasure.
Can't wait to see you all at Neil's Yard Dairy again. Wow, that was super cool to have both Davide and Jay on.
Yeah, that was really great to get to hear both of the gentlemen speak.
The cool thing is the quality approach is the same, culturally totally different. Mm-hmm. Attitude totally different, but the quality, what, you know, the basics of the basics are what's
making.
Right. Mm-hmm. And as I'd said before, please email us any questions, foremanwolf@wypr.org, and we'll see you next week on Foreman Wolf on Food and Wine. Mm-hmm.